What I'd like to talk about this afternoon is the Tower of Babel. You all remember that. The Tower of Babel. At that place in that time, God performed a fantastic miracle. Now, the natives, they'd banded together. The memory of the flood may have been fairly vivid in those people's minds. I'm not sure just how long it had been, but I think at least Shem may have been alive at this time, one of the sons of Noah. As they remembered the great flood, that flood as they saw it, had almost destroyed all of mankind. As they remembered it, that was true. But we always like to blame somebody, don't we? We always like to blame someone. What they remembered maybe was that Noah dodged the bullet, because he just happened to have built a huge boat. And all of mankind die. He watched them as he escaped on said boat. Some of these people may have considered Noah as selfish. You know, if we look at things then like they seem to be these days, well, he was just selfish. You know, that's the reason he escaped. He just got lucky. But the fact is, Noah really believed God. Now, a few generations later, the great human tyrant and dictator and protector, tyrants and dictators are always protectors, Nimrod, proposed that they now prepare, just in case it would ever just happen again, that they might all survive it. We might refer to the Tower of Babel as the World Trade Center of that age. It was tall enough to rise above any devastation of any kind of a worldwide flood. They were preparing. Now, God looked at this in a little bit different manner. He saw this move on the part of human leadership as the beginning salvo of total rejection of God and building toward totality of doing things man's way. Does that sound familiar? Turn to Genesis 9. Genesis 9. They obviously had forgotten about the sign of the rainbow. You remember the sign of the rainbow? And God's promise he had made that it would never happen again. He would never repeat that same kind of occurrence. Turn, as you were, to Genesis 9, and we'll read beginning in verse 12. Genesis 9, verse 12. And God said, "This is the token of the covenant, an agreement, which I made between me and you, every living creature that is with you for a perpetual generations. I do set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth. And it shall come to pass, when I bring a cloud over the earth, that the bow shall be seen in the cloud." Verse 15, this is important. "And I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh, and the water shall no more become a flood to destroy all the earth." No more. And then he goes on to say in verse 17, "This is the token of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that's upon the earth." And yet these people were building a tower, kind of trying to escape something. They didn't believe God. See, the things God says, people forget. We tend to forget what God says. And that society was just like our society today. Now, the bottom line is, they just didn't believe God. It sounds like the whole of the religious world today. The religious world believes in God, but they don't believe God. They don't believe what he says. So with the creativity God had built into man, he saw a rapid movement toward man's self-destruction. And soon, he seen it to happen soon. From creation to the flood was only some 16-odd years. And we know what happened in those 1,600-some-odd years. How mankind's imagination was nothing but evil continually. And God was to see to it that didn't happen again that soon. So God's plan was 6,000 years, right, for man. And 1,000 years Sabbath rule in his righteousness. So he simply confused the languages. Yes, hey, take care of that. Take care of that. Can I say that? Take care of that. Total communication by man was no longer possible. So all bets were off on the tower, Case was closed. That's all over. In so doing, he then dispersed humanity all over the globe and then separated the condition of man still exists today. I mean, up until the last 50 years or so. Human beings were separated by their languages. Then, in the 90s, as I recall, hello, computer technology. For the masses, the average person all over the world can now begin to have success and access to mass communication. 1990, and that's been, over 20 years ago. We've got smartphones with mobile access to most any information that you'd want, any communication you could ask for, and who knows what's next. I quite frankly have a dumb phone. It's a little flip phone. It's not a smartphone. Along with all this technology, as I understand, available is the ability, the technology to translate languages. Does that exist, doesn't it? Yeah. Turn to Genesis 11. Genesis 11. I don't know how that works, but different languages are not much of a barrier anymore. Genesis 11, verse 1. This is the time of the Tower of Babel, or depending on what part of the country you're from, the Tower of Babel. And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. Genesis 11, verse 1. And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and slime they had for mortar. A good building material, by the way. And they said, go to, let us build us a city, a tower whose top may reach up into the heavens, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. So I've read that for many years. I didn't realize there was three things there. They wanted to build a tower, a city, and they wanted to make a name for themselves. So then in verse 6 there, Genesis 11, verse 6, God says, behold, the people are one, and they have all one language. And this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. Just the pre-flood era all over again. Go to, let us go down there and confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So they left off building the tower, and once again, as I mentioned before, all bets were off on the city. So the word Babel or Babel means biblically confusion, and Satan is the author of confusion. We think of babbling as meaningless noises from the mouth. That's exactly what went on then. Can you imagine working next to a guy and all at once he starts going blah, 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 whatever, his speech you can't understand. I think I worked at a place like that one time. God recognized that at that time, man was on the threshold of total unification of all mankind. And man's way, which would open the door to man having the ability for self-destruction, which goes along with that, self-destruction, was not to happen then. Was not to happen. Does that sound familiar? I think we're there now. What a coincidence. The problem here was not necessarily that everyone spoke one language. That's not a bad thing. It's how they use it, just like today. It's how we use things that makes good inventions bad. All the wonderful technology that we have, the thing that makes it bad is how we use it. One of the original, as I understand it, uses of the Internet was to publish pornography. And I think the same thing could be said of the video industry. So turn to Zechariah 3. Zechariah 3. If a universal language is not wrong, so what was wrong with the Tower of Babel? Let's see what God says about it. Zephaniah 3, verse 8. Therefore, wait you upon me, saith the Lord, until the day that I rise up to the prey. For my determination is to gather the nation that I may assemble the kingdoms to pour upon them mine indignation, even all of my fierce anger, for all the earth shall be devoured with fire of my jealousy. Speaking of the end times, God will allow the destruction of man's great accomplishments. All that man has accomplished will go down the drain. The world of man has created by Satan's inspiration. Just as an example, Mr. Joe Familetti, on Thursday, he walked by me and he said, "Let me show you some snapshots." I don't, he may have showed it to some of the rest of you. They were snapshots of the old Pocono Tabernacle building. And as it appears now, they weren't over, you didn't see the whole building, but you saw the front of the administration building and the parking lot and like that. Brush had grown up, tumbleweeds and Canadian thistles, stuff like that, were just all over the place. Brush looked like total devastation. That was once a pride and joy of the Church of God. Those of you who have been in church for a long time, you remember those tabernacle buildings was the thing, and they performed a great service to all the church. It was great, but a funny thing happened. God left. The same thing can happen to all of us individually if we're not careful, if he leaves us individually. But all of this will change. When the presence of God returns to rule the earth, he will return to rule the earth in truth, in love. We're still there. Zephaniah 3, let's read verse 9. Zephaniah 3, verse 9. "For then will I turn to the people a pure language, that they may all call upon the name of the Lord, to serve him with one consent." That's what happens and results from one pure language. Verse 13. "The remnant of Israel shall not do iniquity, nor speak lies, neither shall they have a deceitful tongue." Now that's a result of a pure language too. Do we remember CB communication? Some of you had CBs. Wonderful thing. I thought it would be a great thing. I thought it was a wonderful teaching tool. We would have a tool that we would be able to learn to speak, like they speak on the radio, in pear-shaped tones and that sort of thing. Wonderful. At first you had to have a license. I had a license. I was proud of that license. Then I used my CB radio on the road a few times. I found out the things that I heard, a multitude of terms that I had never heard before. I had no idea what they were talking about. And I tried to recall some, but I couldn't recall many, and that's probably a good thing. One that I remember is comedian. You remember comedian? Well, I don't mean a funny guy. The trucker said, there's a bear. Oh, that's another one. Bears. Now, we all understand what a bear is, a state patrolman. There's a bear and a comedian. That's that grass strip down between the four-lane highway. It was a median, but they just put a comm in there, And of course, there's Good Buddy. I think they dropped that pretty quick because it began to mean something else. So, but that's neither here nor there. So how's your email communication coming along? Same deal. I thought, this is a wonderful thing. What a wonderful vehicle for practicing written communication to each other. Guess again. I don't know many here. I couldn't find my list, but I remembered two of them. TTYL and LOL. Most of you may know what that is. I don't know what that is. That doesn't mean anything to me. Then there's the natural evolution of communication in a society, and words in general. Each year there's certain terms that are given birth to that year, and some of them go into Webster's dictionary. They become legitimate. And there's slang floating around now that would make our great-grandparents wonder what language we were speaking. Or maybe even our grandparents, and maybe even our parents. What are you talking about? Turn to Revelation 3. Revelation 3. So included in God's promise that he will institute a new and pure language, we are also assured that he, God himself, will have a new name. Oh, that's good. one name that will be recognized by all mankind. Revelation 3, verse 12. We can read that. Revelation 3, verse 12. To him that overcomes will I make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go no more out. And I will write upon him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, which is New Jerusalem. Did you catch that? We'll have a new address as well, which comes down out of heaven from my God. And I will write upon him a new name. God will have a new name. It'll be recognized. We'll understand it. Everyone will understand it. There'll be no more Allah or Allah Akbar or whatever. I don't know. Brahma. I thought a Brahma was a cow. Buddha. Krishna. The Great Spirit. That's Indian lingo. And then there's the Force. I think that's some kind of a space terminology. The Force. And we'll have specific translation as to what some of the biblical names that we read in the Bible that we have for our God. Sometimes we're a little confused by that. There'll be no more confusion, as has been the case with names like, you know, God will have a new name. Jehovah, Yahweh, all those are right and proper names. Then there's the I Am, and then there's the Lord, the Eternal, and even the Christ. We have a concept of those names, and that's not bad. That's good. But it's not something you can really teach to the world unless God calls them and opens their mind. God's new name will clarify all that. The new revealed name of God will be included in the new language. Turn to Isaiah 62. Now, not only that, but we will have new names as well. All of you will have new names. The resurrected saints of God will be given new, accurately meaningful names. And where will we get those? God will assign those names to us. Isaiah 62. Isaiah 62, verse 2. And the Gentiles shall see thy righteousness, and all kings your glory, and you shall be called by a new name, which the mouth of the Lord shall name. God will assign that name to us. God will give us a new name. Turn to Revelation 2, verse 17. Revelation 2, verse 17. For a little more information on that. He that has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says unto the churches. To him that overcomes will I give to eat of the hidden manna, and will give him a white stone, in the stone a new name written. And then there's a curious phrase here, which no man knows except he that receives it. Now, when you look at that, it doesn't make sense quite like that. But we'll speculate on that in just a minute. God's family will be provided in every way, provided for. Everyone will be given a new ID. It won't be a Social Security number. I mean, somebody can steal that. No one can steal your new godly name. Now, the names we've been given at birth may not have been given much thought by our parents regarding meaning. If you've had children, you probably had a name book. But usually the name that our parents gave us was because it kind of sounded good as it rolled off their tongue. And it was cute, or it was manly, or it was feminine, whatever, you know. Sometimes we were named after our parent, or our uncle, or our aunt, relatives of some sort. And sometimes male children, when parents run out of names, they just give them the same name as their father, and label them senior, junior, the third. All of you are surely familiar with Mr. Frank McCready. I think he's a pastor in Dayton. And sometimes he's referred to as Frank McCready Jr. Well, he's not Frank McCready Jr. He's Frank McCready the third. His father is Frank McCready Jr. Frank McCready Jr.'s father, which we knew Frank McCready Jr., and his father, which none of us ever met, was the original Frank McCready, obviously. So that can be a little confusing as time goes on. God will give his family name new names that accurately describe them. Names that accurately describe what you are and how you are and your nature and your being. Now, My name is Dale. Most of you know that. Through the years, we found out that Dale means, my friend Dale here said Valley, but it's Pleasant Valley. I assured her that her name meant Pleasant Valley. Obviously, my parents weren't giving too much thought to the meaning of names when they named me. If they had known and looked all these things up and named me according to meaning, they would probably said maybe my name would have been Bacchus or something like that, which means makes a loud noise. So I'll assign the rest of you to look at the meaning of your names. And if you've never thought about it, you might be surprised. So think about that. So now, in addition to that, we see the indication of the new name which no man knows except he that receives it. It seems at least to imply that no one else will be given that same name. It's like fingerprints, and I understand you can be identified by the iris in your eye. You know, there's no two eyes alike, and they have ways of doing that too with lasers. So in order to have access to some high security establishments, they use that. So our new names may be like that. Each one of us will have an individual, meaningful name assigned only to you, each of you individually. The new language will be not be confused in the following ways. Now, the English language is a little confusing. You remember homonyms in school? I'll give you a little bit more on that. Homonyms are divided into two categories. I didn't know this. There are homographs and homophones. A homograph are words that are spelled the same but may sound and or have different meanings. A homograph. Here are just three or four. Lead. That means to go in front of. And then, of course, there's a word spelled exactly the same. Lead. That's in bullets. And then there's wind. That means to follow a course that is not straight. And then there's wind, still W-I-N-D, a gust of air. Then there's bass. And then a type of fish, which is bass, spelled exactly the same. And here's a good one, a sow, meaning a female pig. And then, of course, the same word is used to plant seeds, but we call it sow. So a homophone is words that sound the same, same pronunciation, but have different meanings and are spelling. Am I losing you? I just got lost myself. Okay. Words like two, T-O, T-W-O, and T-O, they're all two, but they all mean something different. And there, T-H-E-R-E, and T-H-E-I-R, and T-H-E-Y. Apostrophe R-E, there. That's all there. And then there's pray and pray. And some of you pray, and some of you pray. So when you pray, you seek God. But if you pray, P-R-E-Y, you're out hunting somewhere for game. That's your prey. And then there's flower and flower, spelled totally different. It's either a posy or powder to bake with. That's flower. So, here's write and write. Some of you are right, and some of you are writing. To put words down on paper, or somebody has told you you're correct, okay, if you're right. So let's look at the rest of the scripture here. Zephaniah 3 again. Zephaniah 3 verse 9. Where we were before. Here's the rest of the story. Zephaniah 3 verse 9. For then, at the time we were talking about earlier, when a new language would be established by our Creator, for then will I turn the people a pure language, that they may all call upon the name of the Lord to serve Him with one consent. There's a real purpose in the creation of a pure language, a real purpose. That purpose is so all the family of God may serve Him with one consent. So my title is A Pure Language, to Serve God with One Consent. Now, the underlying purpose for there being one language is right there in the Scripture. And sometimes we may have overlooked that. To serve God with one consent or one purpose. To be united in our service to God. During the early years of this church era, the good news of the kingdom of God was disseminated around the world. Two, receptive ears. Churches were established all over the globe. We became a church of God that was worldwide. That is, in fact, why they renamed it from the Radio Church of God to the Worldwide Church of God. And Satan did his best to disrupt and destroy that condition all through those years. He did not destroy the church, but he did slow it down. That happened in 1995. So as God began to convert us, he caused us to see and understand the Christian world did not call on God with one consent. We were all, during the period of our calling, we had a little problem understanding that, well, how can all these Christians be wrong? Well, they can all be wrong because none of them agree. We finally saw ourselves, we, the Church of God, as essentially the only church that maintained that kind of belief. All the other churches, well, they're all Christian churches, so they're all using different avenues to go to the same place, wherever the place is. And as God began to convert us, he caused us to understand that the Christian world did not call on God with one consent. Now, we saw ourselves that we, the church, as essentially the only church that maintained that kind of belief, that we served God with one consent as opposed to the plethora of other Christian churches out there. At one time, I understand the Feast of Tabernacles was the largest convention of that type and size that convoked all around the earth. I don't know, maybe you've heard that or understand that. With one consent, with one purpose, and for one goal. You know, we all had the first holy day, we all had the last holy day, and we, for the most part, met the first eve, and things were done on a certain format. That happened all around the earth. And we were, as I understand it, probably the biggest organization that was able to do that in that kind of an organized fashion. For all intents and purposes, we were united. Now, we didn't do that. God did that. That was a sample of what civilization will be like in God's kingdom. That was just a sample. At that time, it seemed that we served God with one consent. Then we forgot Satan was still alive and well and getting more insidious every day. That one consent was shot down in 1995. And from that point on, it seemed even the churches of God couldn't see eye to eye as to what one consent was that we supposedly were serving God with. It's been as though we speak in different languages. A kind of Tower of Babel in reverse came upon the Church of God organizations. Except this time, it wasn't God that separated the churches. It was Satan who separated the languages and the intent of some of the Church of God organizations. But now, God has drawn us together once again. We are a part of a church that has congregations and feast sites all over the world, once again. Oh, sure, we're a lot smaller, but we're still united with one message. Once again, the church is united and with one consent. We keep God's holy days with one consent, with one purpose. Now, my computer didn't agree with that statement. I think it insists that there's no need for consent when there's only one. I keep getting this little green line under there that says, with one consent. It doesn't understand that. But my computer and the world of religion and the society around us today does not understand the oneness of God. The oneness of God. And that all of us, he makes one with him. So in closing, we in the church, our intent is to serve God with one consent or purpose. We must aspire always to that as much as is in our power. You know, we are still human beings. till in the kingdom of God, when it will be made official, when we serve God with one purpose, one consent, and one language. May God speed that day.